In El Astronomy, 1886-312, Professor Pierwas, of the College Barcerobe, quotes two witnesses of a curious phenomenon that occurred in a garden of the college, May 22, 1886. Cloudless sky, wind trace viable. Within a small circle in the garden were some baskets and ashes and a window frame that weighed 60 kilograms. These things suddenly rose from the ground. At a height of about 40 feet, they remained suspended several minutes, then falling back to the place from which they had risen. Not a thing outside this small circle had been touched by the seizure. The witnesses said that they had felt no disturbance in the air. Scientific American, 56-65, that in June, 1886, according to the London Times, a well-known official was entering Pall Mall, when he felt a violent blow on the shoulder and heard a hissing sound. There was no one in sight except a distant policeman. At home, he found that the nap of his coat looked as if a hot wire had been pressed against the cloth, in a long, straight line. No missile was found, but it was thought that something of a meteoritic nature had struck him. Charleston News and Courier, November 25, 1886. That, at Edina, MO, November 23, a man and his three sons were pulling corn on a farm. Nothing is said of meteorologic conditions, and, for all I know, they may have been pulling corn in a violent thunderstorm. Something that is said to have been lightning flashed from the sky. The man was slightly injured, one son killed, the other seriously injured, the third had disappeared. What has become of him is not known, but it is supposed that he was blinded or crazed by the shock, and wandered away. Brooklyn Eagle, March 17, 1891. That, at Wilkes-Barre, PA, March 16, two men were lifted bodily and carried considerable distance in a whirlwind. It was a powerful force, but nothing else was affected by it. Upon the same day, there was an occurrence in Brooklyn. In the New York Times, March 17, 1891, it is said that two men, Smith Morehouse, of Orange Co., NY, and William Owen, of Sussex Co., NJ, were walking in Vanderbilt Avenue, Brooklyn, about 2 o'clock, afternoon of the 16th, when a terrific explosion occurred close to the head of Morehouse, injuring him and stunning Owen, the flash momentarily blinding both. Morehouse's face was covered with marks like powder marks, and his tongue was pierced. With no one else to accuse, the police arrested Owen, but held him upon the technical charge of intoxication. Morehouse was taken to a hospital, where a splinter of metal, considered either brass or copper, but not a fragment of a cartridge, was removed from his tongue. No other material could be found, though an object of considerable size had exploded. Morehouse's head had been perforated in 6 places by unfindable substances. According to witnesses, there had been no one within 100 feet of the men. One witness had seen the flash before the explosion, but could not say whether it had been from something falling or not. In the Brooklyn Eagle, March 17, 1891, it is said that neither of the men had a weapon of any kind, and that there had been no disagreement between them. According to a witness, they had been under observation at the time of the explosion, her attention having been attracted by their rustic appearance. There is an interesting merging here of the findable and the unfindable. I suppose that no one will suppose that someone threw a bomb at these men. But enough substance was found to exclude the notion of lightning from a clear sky. Something of a meteoritic nature seems excluded. 28. Out from a round, red planet, a little white shaft of fairy's arrow shot into an apple. June 10, 1892. A light like a little searchlight, projecting from the limb of Mars. Upon July 11 and 13, it was seen again, by Campbell and Hussey, Nature, 50-500. August 3, 1892. Climacteric opposition of Mars. Upon August 12, 1892, flashes were seen by many persons, in the sky of England. C.N. Mech, Volume 56. At Manchester, so like signals were they, or so unlike anything commonly known as auroral were they, that Albert Buss mistook them for flashes from a lighthouse. They were seen at Dewsbury, described by a correspondent to the English mechanic, who wrote, "I have never seen such an appearance of an aurora. Rapid flashes reported from Loughborough. A shining triangle in a dark circle." In L. Astronomy, 1888-75, Dr. Klein publishes an account of de Spysen's observation of November 23, 1887, a luminous triangle on the floor of Plato. Dr. Klein says it was an effect of sunlight. In this period, there were in cities of the United States, some of the most astonishing effects at night, in the history of this earth. If Rigel should run for the presidency of Orion, and if the stars in the Great Nebula should start to march, there would be a spectacle like those that Grover Cleveland called forth in the United States, in this period. So then at least conceivably something similar upon the moon. Flakes of light moving toward Plato, this night of November 23, 1887, from all the other craters of the moon, a blizzard of shining points gathering into light drifts in Plato, then the denizens of Aristarchus and of Kepler, and dwellers from the lunar Alps, each raising his torch, marching upon a triangular path, making the triangle shine in the dark conceivably. Other formations have been seen in Plato, but, according to my records, this symbol that shone in the dark had never been seen before, and has not been seen since. About 2 years later, a demonstration of a more exclusive kind assemblage of all the undertakers of the moon. They stood in a circular formation, surrounded by virgins in their nightgowns and in nightgowns as nightgowns should be. An appearance in Plinius, September 13, 1889, was reported by Professor Thury, of Geneva, a black spot with an intensely white border. March 30, 1889, a black spot that was seen for the first time, by Godi Bird, near the center of Copernicus, L. Astro, 1890-235. May 11, 1889, an object as black as ink upon a rampart of gas Endy, L. Astro, 1889-275. It had never been reported before. At the time of the next lunation, it was not seen again. March 30, 1889, a new black spot in Plinius, L. Astro, 1890-187. The star-like light of Aristarchus. It is a long time since latest preceding appearance, May 7, 1867. Then it cannot be attributed to commonplace lunar circumstances. The light was seen November 7, 1891, by M. D. Ajuda, of the Observatory of Lisbon, a very distinct, luminous point, L. Astro, 11-33. Upon April 1, 1893, a shaft of light was seen projecting from the moon, by M. de Moraes, in the Azores. A similar appearance was seen, September 25, 1893, at Paris, by M. Gabarro, L. Astro, 13-34. Another association like that of 1884 in the English Mechanic, 55-310, a correspondent writes that, upon May 6, 1892, he saw a shining point, not polar, upon Venus. Upon the 13th of August, 1892, the same object conceivably was seen at a short distance from Venus, an unknown, luminous object, like a star of the 7th magnitude that was seen close to Venus, by Professor Barnard, A.S.T. Nock, number 4106. Upon August 24, 1895, in the period of primary maximum brilliance of Venus, a luminous object, it is said, was seen in the sky, in daytime, by someone in Donegal, Ireland. Upon this day, according to the Scientific American, 73-374, a boy, Robert Alcorn, saw a large luminous object falling from the sky. It exploded near him. The boy's experience was like Smith Morehouse's. He put his hands over his face, there was a second explosion, shattering his fingers. According to Professor George M. Minchin, no substance of the object that had exploded could be found. Whether there be relation or not, something was seen in the sky of England a week later. In the London Times, September 4, 1895, Dr. J.A.H. Murray writes that, at Oxford, a few minutes before 8 p.m., August 31, 1895, he saw in the sky a luminous object, considerably larger than Venus at greater brilliance, emerge from behind treetops, and sail slowly eastward. It moved as if driven in a strong wind, and disappeared behind other trees. The fact that it so perceptibly grew fainter as it receded seems to imply that it was not at a great elevation, and so favors a terrestrial origin, though I am unable to conceive how anything artificial could have presented the same appearance. In the Times, of the 6th, someone who had read Dr. Murray's letter says that, about the same time, same evening, he, in London, had seen the same object moving eastward so slowly that he had thought it might be a fire balloon from a neighboring park. Another correspondent, who had not read Dr. Murray's letter, his own dated September 3rd, writes from a place not stated that about 8:20 p.m., August 31st, he had seen a star-like object, moving eastward, remaining in sight 4 or 5 minutes. Then someone who, about 8 p.m., same evening, while driving to the Scarborough station, had seen a large shooting star, astonishing him, because of its leisurely rate, so different from the velocity of the ordinary shooting star. There are two other accounts of objects that were seen in the sky, at Bath and at Ramsgate, but not about this time, and I have looked them up in local newspapers, finding that they were probably meteors. In the Oxford Times, September 7th, Dr. Murray's letter to the London Times is reprinted, with this comment: we would suggest to the learned doctor that the supposed meteor was one of the fire balloons let off with the allotments show. Let it be that when allotments are shown, balloons are always sent up, and that this editor did not merely have a notion to this effect. Our data are concerned with an object that was seen, at about the same time, at Oxford, about 50 miles southeast of Oxford, and about 170 miles northeast of Oxford, with a fourth observation that we cannot place.